are the New York Knicks.
I'm back. Back in the New York.
Well, it's the Knicks.
New York, New York.
New York be about the Knicks, huh?
But the best thing about New York City is
K-N-I-C-K-S.
Everybody say go New York, go New York, go!
Everybody, it's New York Knicks Podcast, episode 376, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. I am Jay, and speaking of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, we have Sean from Ode to Odin, part of the network. How you doing, Sean?
Good. How you doing, Jay?
I am doing great. So you do a draft podcast.
Yeah.
And the Knicks have a draft pick. So this is really convenient. This doesn't happen every year. So I'm kind of amped about that. Before we get into all the draft stuff, though, the big news of the week, I think, is Noah getting suspended.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, I thought we were going to go an entire week without this team embarrassing themselves. Streak over.
You guys are great because the level, like the quality of the complaining that you guys do, I mean, you just perfected it over so long. I mean, I haven't been listening, you know, for many seasons at all, just the past few months. But I mean, you guys have this down to an art. Like what's going to happen, you know, when some competency comes in and you guys are actually good again? Like, what are you going to do? That's a whole different skill set, right?
It's going to be awkward and weird. I don't know. I don't know what we'll do. I mean, even that one season we did when we had the 54-win season, we knew, I mean, we were excited, but we knew it wasn't sustainable. I mean, five of those guys were over 38 years old. So it was like,
right,
let's enjoy this while it lasts. If we actually get like a young core, we're going to be pretty happy.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
They're saying that Noah is suspended for 10 games this season. That's kind of bull. I mean, I'm probably one of the only guys that complains that his player isn't getting suspended. You know, his suspension isn't longer next season.
Yeah.
But I mean, they announced he was out for the rest of the season, so we kind of got off pretty easy.
So I'm just curious, like he is the subject of such ridicule. Like whenever I think of Noah, it's hard for me to think about anything else other than the contract. I don't even know if I've heard you guys talk about it, and I'm sure the listeners don't want me to rehash this over and over again, but you know, with this potential exciting new core that you guys have coming up with all these draft picks, and you know, you're tanking for it and blah blah blah. I mean, when Noah comes up in the news, is it kind of like it's like a break from talking about the horrible contract? Because whenever I hear people talk about the Knicks in the, you know, the general NBA universe, I mean, that's all they talk about. It's just his contract, right? So at least this is something else to talk about, I guess.
This is more like the cherry on top of the terrible contract. As if it wasn't bad enough, now he's already going to miss, you know, I mean, I don't know if they're going to, I heard they might change their stance because they know he's out the rest of the season. Potentially, he's going to miss a quarter of next season. And that's if he's healthy, which he may not be. So, this just makes the contract even worse, which is, I didn't think it could. Appleboy said that he knew that head of hair was medically enhanced.
Well, I wonder, who was it? Was it the end of last season or maybe the beginning of this season? Somebody was coming back from injury. Oh, was it Blake Griffin who was going to serve his suspension? And they had like a timetable for his broken hand. Remember when he punched whatever the trainer was, the best friend of him and DeAndre or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
and
all of a sudden his hand got better.
Yeah, yeah. And they brought him back knowing that, you know, he would have healed in whatever time span. And there was some confusion whether he actually was ready to go or not. But he still served his suspension in that time. So, you know, maybe you guys could pull something like that. And so he wouldn't miss extra time. But like, if we're being completely honest, this doesn't really change anything, right? I mean, you guys are tanking, and I suppose you're kind of pro tanking, right? Like you guys don't want to win. I guess maybe playing Noah is in itself tanking. Him getting minutes maybe doesn't change that one way or the other. But yeah, this probably doesn't change any eventual outcome. It's just annoying or embarrassing or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly heartbroken because he's pretty washed up. It's just another thing that happens. I mean, it's like, yeah, of course it happened, and of course the only player to get suspended for drugs this year was the Knicks. I mean, of course.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's depressing, but the draft is here, and there's a lot of hope in the draft. Like, implicit in the draft and the whole, like, upside down rankings, right? Where if you're bad, then you get a high pick. I mean, that's what this thing is for. So, you know, there's hope on the horizon.
There is hope. Right now, the Knicks are doing their best to dash that hope. They're up by 14 in the third against the Pistons. They're in a three-way tie for fourth. So, you know way more than I do about the draft. So, I guess I'm guessing the Knicks are going to get somewhere between the fourth and seventh pick.
Sounds reasonable.
I guess there's a slim chance they go higher, but I mean...
Yeah, there's almost no chance. I mean, you guys are like, what, it's 5.5 games, right? Between you and Phoenix right now. So, yeah, there's almost no way I think you guys make that up. So, you're fourth or...
Well, I mean, if they finish with the
fourth through eighth, maybe something like that.
If they finish with the fourth worst record, they still have a 12% chance of getting that number one pick. So it's possible. But I think Fultz is pretty much everyone's consensus number one, right?
Definitely. No doubt.
So, I mean, we don't have to spend too much time on that. But I haven't watched too much of the tournament. But from what I hear, this guy's going to be great.
Yeah, well, Fultz, interestingly enough... didn't actually make the tournament because he's on a horrible team, Washington, just like Simmons of last year. And kind of unsurprisingly, the guy that I think will be the number one pick next year, his name is Michael Porter Jr. He just decommitted from Washington because they fired their coach because he was awful. He committed to Missouri, and we're already kind of banking on the fact that 3 years in a row, Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz, and Michael Porter Jr. Granted, obviously a lot can change from now until then. But if he is the number one pick, then he probably won't make the NCAA tournament either.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. That's just kind of interesting that, you know, we talk about all of these players that, by the end of the year, it turned into the armchair psychology bit where you say, oh, he's not a winner because, you know, he doesn't really care about it. He doesn't care about his teammates. He's quitting, blah, blah, blah. Is he really a winner? You know, all these tropes, these stupid cliches. And, it turns out that, well, my prediction is that all of these guys are going to be perennial all-stars. So, you know, I it's just a little bit of nonsense. Interesting, but nonsense.
So it's not like padded stats on a bad team?
I mean, maybe a little bit, but not really, because, I mean, they're still playing quality opponents, right? They're not, like, playing in the Big Sky Conference or something, right? Like, it would be one thing if they were playing bad opponents and padding their stats, but they're playing good to decent opponents sometimes very good opponents. Obviously, the Pac-12 and the SEC, you know, they have great teams. And the stats that they're putting up are actually, I would say, even more impressive because – they are always the focal point of the defense, right? So if you're playing a good team and they just know, let's stop Fultz. You know, he has two or three things that he likes to do. These two or three actions are kind of their bread and butter. So let's stop those things and make everyone else beat us, you know, and he's still putting up monster numbers. So maybe it's even more impressive. I don't know if the statistics bear that out, but yeah, maybe it's even more impressive. I'm not sure.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you have a draft board up? Did you like rank everybody or?
Yeah, I have one. It's not, it's obviously it's different than, you know, a lot of the kind of more consensus draft stuff like from Draft Express. So I don't know, maybe I can have both up and kind of do a little bit of a comparison or something like that. But yeah, I kind of have my own.
So the question is, say the Knicks pick like fifth, do the Knicks go for the point guard because they really need one, or do they go for the best player available?
So that's a really good question. One that I think about a lot, and I definitely don't have the exact answer, but a while ago, because of the Sam Hinkie tanking thing and blah, 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 there was a huge discussion around draft philosophy, like BPA, which is best player available, or do you draft for need? And it's I don't think it's one or the other. A lot of people are really hardcore BPA guys where you just take the best player available no matter what, no matter if, you know, you already have two centers on the roster a la Philly. I don't think that's probably the smartest way to go about it, because then you kind of get developmental and playing time issues, you know? So like the assets kind of depreciate a little bit. I think you need to take a little bit of fit in mind. And so how I try to attack that problem, I don't, you know, who knows if this is the best way or not. And this definitely isn't like, you know, I'm not reinventing the wheel here, but I rank people in tiers. So, you know, at your tier, if you have a fit issue, there are three guys in this tier. Like, for example, in tier two, I have Josh Jackson, Lonzo Ball, and Jonathan Isaac. If you have a fit issue, and I can't even think of any of those teams that are going to be drafting in that range, like maybe for you guys, I don't know. Yeah, there's not even a fit issue there, really, that you just take the best player available. But if there is a fit issue, then you should probably select, you know, who you think the second best guy in that tier is or whatever. I don't know. Does that make sense? Was that too convoluted?
Yeah, no, it does. I was chatting with Strive earlier, and he said, I was talking about how I think Porzingis will develop a lot better and a lot quicker if we actually have a point guard.
Yeah.
And he was saying that the Knicks don't have a lot of three-point shooters to spread the floor. They don't have guys that are good at shooting. And I said, they don't have guys that are good at pretty much everything.
That's right.
So I don't think I don't think any player is going to be a problem, because they're, you know, at the very like best, they have like one good guy at per position. And
yeah,
most
I think
positions,
you're right.
There are
and,
many.
And those guys, all those guys besides maybe Porzingis, right, are probably not like long-term guys, but you wouldn't consider them part of your core. So I would probably list you along with the Lakers, the Suns. I mean, maybe the Lakers at like two guard with D'Angelo Russell and Ingram at the 3-4, but those guys are pretty versatile as far as position goes. So maybe the Lakers, the Suns, Orlando, the Kings, and you guys are like, I would put kind of in this depressing category, sorry, of just like completely without any assets, or maybe just one asset that's a little bit versatile. Like Porzingis, I think defensively, he's, you correct me if I'm wrong, you're the expert here, but from what I've seen and the numbers that bear it out, I think Porzingis is probably a little bit better playing the four defensively than the five. You know, maybe you hope that he develops that, because that's probably his ideal position if you want to completely maximize, you know, an offensive system around him. Mm-hmm. I just think it makes sense for those teams that I just mentioned to just not care at all about fit and just go best player available, probably just because, you know, they don't really have a core that they're building around that's going to mess with anything, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. As far as guards, Appleboy wants to know, Fox, Monk, Smith Jr., Talinka, who works best with KP?
Fox, Monk, Ntilikina, and who was the fourth? Smith?
Smith.
That's a good question. So I am really low on Fox, like way more than kind of the consensus is. I think that you should draft Fox after the lottery. He has the shooting woes are too great at this point, and I don't think he shows enough in other areas to make up for that. Dennis Smith Jr., he's like a huge question mark, just because there's like zero effort there at all, unless he's running the high pick and roll, or he's in an ISO situation, like off ball on offense, off ball on defense, nothing. That's getting a little bit into like the armchair psychology stuff that I was talking about before. And I don't want to go too deep into the kid's personality and, you know, if he's a good kid, you know, like intangible stuff. I don't personally know that. And I try, unless it's glaringly obvious, I don't fear it. Unless it's Cousins, I don't really factor it in. Frank Ntilikina is somebody that I personally I'm very, very high on. He's not the point guard, which kind of, I think, scares a lot of people off. He's not a primary initiator. He's definitely an off-ball offensive player. He can run a little bit of kind of basic actions and make like two or three reads, right? But he's not going to be creating a lot of attempts at the rim. He rarely kind of gets all the way there. Off the dribble, he doesn't shoot a ton of threes, especially kind of in pick and roll situations, mostly in transition. But defensively, this guy's a freak. And as an off-ball shooter, he's really good. So I think that, like, he's like a super George Hill, which is super, super valuable, especially in terms of roster construction. You know, you can put him anywhere. You can play him with the two. In fact, right now, he's a French guy that plays for Strasbourg, SIG. And over in Europe, there are a lot of teams that have small primary creators, small like college players that couldn't make it in the NBA, but are dominant athletically and super, super quick. And so he plays a lot off the ball, although with his French team, in all of like the FIBA summer games, like the U16, U17, U18 games, U19 games, he's always the point guard. And against his peers, he's completely dominant. He won the MVP over the summer and was putting up just monster numbers. There's just so much there to work with, like a 7-foot wingspan, 6'5". Defensively, he's one of the most polished defenders that I've seen at his age. He's like only 18 right now. I think he's the youngest kid in the draft, if not like one of the five youngest kids in the draft. I know that I'm irrationally high. And then everyone, probably the answer to your question, everyone else would say Dennis Smith Jr. because he has all the physical gifts and the handle and like the start and stop hesitation stuff to be really good in a high pick and roll. Although I think there are tons of question marks and I'm not sure I believe in his jumper. So I guess my point is that I would take Nil Aquina if you're like dying for a point guard, but for you guys, since you're not, you know, that it may not even be kind of a question that you'll have to go down this difficult road.
Oh, we're dying for a point guard.
But patience, right? Like in the rebuilding, patience, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the sooner we get a point guard, the better. I mean, that's kind of the foundation of, you know, everything we need.
But if you commit to, if you hit your wagon to a subpar point guard, it's just,
oh yeah,
be more tragedy to come, right? I mean, so I guess my point is that don't force yourself into a point guard, like if you're having to, you know, draft somebody who you think is in a lower tier. Like, I think, I don't think you guys get, well, maybe you get low enough to justify Dennis Smith Jr. And I think a lot of other people would say that. And maybe Malik Monk. I know that you had him in that category, but so yeah, he's definitely out of the question as far as like running sets and, you know, reading the defense and that kind of stuff. His passes are pretty premeditated. I don't think he's a point guard at all. Although he'd be exciting for you guys, no doubt. Like if you fall in like the 6, 7, 8 range, Malik Monk is an interesting pick for sure.
Okay. That's sounds like you really want Tilakina. Tickalina.
Well, I mean, if those are my options, that's what I do. But,
if
you guys are at number 4, sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, if we draft him, we should take bets over under on the first one of us to pronounce his name correctly. I give it about 37 to 40 games.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there are actually some draft guys now that I interview who are like really locked into this stuff that are messing it up all the time. And yeah, it's a silent T, so it's like Nil Aquina. I'm pretty sure that's right.
Hopefully he gets a nickname real quick.
Yeah, Frank. His first name is Frank, so it's like he fits in perfectly there in New York, right? You just call him Frank, and that's it. It's perfect.
Frankie.
Yeah, exactly. Frankie. Adopted New Yorker.
Let's see. We got a bunch of questions. You want to just go through the questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Oh, we didn't recap the last 4 games. The Knicks lost all of them, and they looked ugly in all of them. Okay, moving on. Lorenzo writes, who would you take as your starting 5? Melo, Rose, KP, Lee, and Billy. Total value $63 million, which has taken years of crafting to get. Or Deron Williams, Kyle Korver, Derek Williams, Andrew Bogut, Larry Sanders. Total value of $6.2 million, not a typo. A bunch of scraps that the Cavs have managed to sign to minimum deals.
Well, that's interesting.
That is the most depressing email I think we've gotten in months. Thank you for that.
I will defer to you on this one.
I mean, I just think the point is that's a better bench than we have, and they basically got them for free, which is disgusting. Nicholas writes, I think that if we don't draft someone in the first round, there are a lot of point guards out there, and someone may go undrafted, like Aaron Holiday, who has been a good system of that, is not getting much praise because of Alonzo Ball overshadowing him. What do you think of Aaron Holiday?
So the question is Aaron Holiday like a legitimate draft pick? Like, should he be higher?
I think he's saying, would that be a good guy to look at if he doesn't get drafted?
He's interesting, I guess, but okay. So here's the deal. Short point guards rarely, if ever, hit. So like everyone's going to say, oh no, what about Isaiah Thomas? What about Yogi Ferrell? What about Tyler Ulis looks really good for the Suns right now? You know, what about this? What about that? I mean, these guys are all the exceptions. Like if you want to play that game, like just like don't go bet, right? Like you never place your bet on like the 5% odds that someone's going to be good. And his ceiling wouldn't even be that high. Like if he was a lot better on defense and he showed like a modicum of passing ability, then, you know, then maybe like that gamble becomes a little more interesting. But a short guy who's just a primary creator, an isolation scorer who can't play defense and is not a great passer, you know, although he's great at driving and honestly, he's not, I don't know what his 3-point percentage is, but, I know he doesn't spot up super well. Yeah. I guess that's a long way of saying, no, I think any draft pick is probably worth spending on somebody with a lot more upside, kind of just in the physical department, right? Like I'd rather take a chance on somebody who's underdeveloped on the skill side, but who's 6'7" with a 7-foot wingspan, who's lightning quick, that maybe you can teach to shoot and play defense, you know?
You basically just described short Derrick Rose.
Well, honestly, Derrick Rose probably had a lot more vision than him, you know, back in his heyday. I know that he's a little bit different now. And Rose probably off the dribble, 3-pointers are probably a little bit better. But yeah, the point is solid for sure.
Appleboy writes, if we draft Monk and sign Drew Holiday, are we still bad enough to get a high lottery pick next year?
Yes, right? For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as you have these bad contracts, I mean, I mean, definitely. I mean, I don't think you should do that, but
I don't either.
But yeah, I guess technically you would, and that would be kind of a sneaky way to tank, I guess. And
I mean, if you think about it, if we get Holiday, that means we don't have Rose, and then Holiday's going to get injured for about 25 games, and then our lineup would still be Lee, Monk, Porzingis. It's the same thing. It's basically the same team as this year. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. That's fine. Are you guys interested? Is that kind of like what the Knicks fans are pulling for right now, is Holiday?
I seem to be getting a lot of emails saying there was so much backlash against getting Rubio, and everyone seems to want to get a guy like Teague or Holiday. I would rather pay $6 million less a year and have a guy like Rubio, but I guess
for sure, especially for Porzingis' development, right? Like it would be amazing for him. I think, I guess, if the head honcho upstairs allows you guys to throw out the triangle and just run high pick and roll over and over and over again, then yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, because I mean, Holiday's injured a lot, and then guys like George Hill or Teague, like, they're nearing or at the wrong side of 30. It's like, I don't see how that solves anything.
Yeah, and I think probably those latter two guys stay where they are, right? I think
probably. And then if they do, then the Knicks have, you know, all this money, and the Knicks aren't the type of team to keep it and wait for somebody. They're going to panic and spend it on like a fourth tier point guard.
Which is also not a horrible tanking strategy. So if you're pro tanking, which I definitely am, I think it's the way to go.
The thing is, like, if you're tanking, you do that for 1 or 2 years, but the Knicks are dumb and they'll do it for like 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, 4-year contracts, obviously, when you're not any good, are really dangerous to Joakim. But, you know, we covered that at the beginning.
It's shocking every time.
We got
time,
most of the
though.
Depression out of the way.
I mean, when you realize there's still 3 years left, I mean, it's just, I'm not going to get over it until 3 years from now. This is, Nicholas writes, is this the triangle process, or trust the triangle, the fill process? And also, let's just say Phil gets fired. Do you trust Steve Mills to run the franchise? Oh my God.
Honestly, this is bad. And I consider myself an NBA guy, not a college guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't even know who this Mills fellow is.
Oh, he was terrible in his previous jobs.
Oh, who is he though? Is he, he's like your GM guy underneath Phil?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But I don't, nobody can figure out what he really does. It seems like Phil calls the shots and Hornacek's the coach. So I guess Mills just nods when Phil says something.
Well, that's probably not too bad of a thing, right? If you don't know what he does, which means he's not doing anything stupid. Unfortunately, you know, unless like guys in the background who are the nerd CBA guys and the guys who really know what's going on and the guys who are really, who give, you know, decision makers like Phil good advice, unless they're like making horrible mistakes, you probably don't hear anything about it. So that might be like one positive thing to hang your hat on, right? I'm trying to be positive here.
Yeah, but shouldn't he have said like, Phil, Noah sucks?
Well, I don't think, I don't, you probably can't put that on him. That's gotta be all on Phil. I mean, because we don't know whether he did or he didn't. And I'm sure that he did. I mean, who in their right mind would have done that unless you have some notion. I mean, so what was the logic? Like, what's like the best story that you've heard of? That kind of detailed out the logic behind this. That has something to do with his agent. Was somebody doing somebody a favor? Was there some talk about him coming back from this injury with a certain amount of health, certain amount of spring? Like, I just can't fathom the narrative that him and his agent would have to spin to kind of convince people. And I don't know. Phil doesn't strike me as the most current NBA mastermind from like a decision personnel kind of perspective, although the preseason before he seemed to have made all the right moves with some restraint, right? So like, what was the best narrative that you heard? I haven't heard a good one.
This is what I heard. Noah ran into Phil in New York and said he was healthy and he let Phil do a pull up on his arm.
That can't be true.
You know, with the Knicks, I believe pretty much everything at this point, because we've had like four more preposterous stories happen like during the season. So who knows?
Oh, that can't be true. Although it's hilarious, and there's got to be like a million memes out there that are hilarious. If you have one, send it my way. But yeah, oh, that's great. Wait, how tall is Phil? Phil's, what are you, like 6'9" or something?
Yeah, Phil's really tall. So I don't even know how that would even work. And
yeah, the physics may not even add up there. So,
and if that's what sold Phil, then he completely ignores the entire lower body, which is what broke down on Noah anyway. Yeah. So who knows? Lorenzo writes, important basketball-related question. Do you reckon Magic Johnson has shagged Jeannie Buss? I say yes. He's 2 years older than her and was a bit of a lady killer before his announcement.
I don't know, man. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He seems like a great family guy by all accounts. He's a really hard worker, sticks to a regimen. His wife's name is Cookie. And I mean, I'm married and taken, but she's an attractive lady and seems very nice. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on this one.
Let's see. Appleboy says, I hope Reggie Miller has a heart attack while trying to pronounce our future lineup of Nelkina, Porzingis, Hernan Gomez, and Kuzminskis.
So Kuzminskis, give me the lowdown on him. How has he been doing this last half of the season? Because I was really interested in him before the draft. I had seen some international games of him and kind of liked him like a little bit, but didn't really see this coming, at least, you know, the way that he was playing the first kind of like quarter, the first third of the season.
Yeah, his minutes have been inconsistent. He won't get playing time for like a week or two, and then one day coach is like, hey, you're starting. It's been very inconsistent. He's looked okay in spurts. I mean, tonight he has 17 minutes. He's a plus five. He's been okay. I'm still trying to decide if he's like decent or bad on defense.
Yeah.
It seems like everybody on this team will have like a game every couple weeks where they lock somebody down. And you're like, oh, like, why doesn't this happen more than once every seven games?
Yeah. That's funny. It's really interesting for me to watch all these international prospects, you know, and like the different venues. So the young guys, you're watching some of these FIBA tournaments where they're playing guys like, you know, from Peru or something like that. And it's just like a no contest. So it's really hard to decipher like who's athletic and who's not, you know?
Yeah.
And then even in some of kind of the middling leagues, like the Serbian league and the Ukrainian league is like non-existent almost. Right. And then, but then you watch EuroLeague stuff and there's tons of guys that we would all recognize that either have come off NBA rosters or big stars in college. And these guys are athletic, and it's just, it's difficult to really understand like how athletic it is. In fact, if we can go back to Neil Aquino for a second, a lot of my NBA draft nerd friends, they're all really, really worried about Neil Aquino's overall athleticism, because he doesn't seem like completely lightning quick, like dominate guys just on straight line drives in some of these like second tier French games that he's playing in. And I'm a little less skeptical, but that's always like a huge question. And so Kuzminskis coming in, it was like you would see some super athletic highlights, but you know, he's playing just kind of an unknown. So yeah, it's just interesting to hear your take on his defense, which was always up in the air. Like I thought, oh, this guy's decently athletic, or he looks pretty athletic in the context that he's in, you know, and then you're saying that his defense is kind of hit or miss, whether he's like average to bad. I guess that's kind of what's expected. And I'm maybe my gauge is starting to be calibrated a little bit better. I'm starting to understand a little bit better, like, you know, what the athleticism context is. But yeah, I guess that's kind of what you expect from these guys, is that their athleticism is almost always in question, unless unfortunately the stereotype holds fairly true over there as well. If they have like African parents, right? If they're like a first generation French or German player or something like that, then they often are as athletic as they look.
The thing is, not everybody's Westbrook, and they don't have to be. Steve Nash won two MVPs and he wasn't athletic at all.
Yeah.
It's just, you gotta be a smart basketball player.
Yeah, it's very true. In fact, kind of speaking to that, not to ramble on here, but something else that I think is really interesting that I've learned just recently, well, not recently, it's been a few months now, but like the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, and this is why Josh Jackson, who somebody that could potentially fall to you guys, could play the three or the four, a forward from Kansas that probably, you know, you and all your listeners have heard of. I think he's probably the second best player in the draft, and his calling card is mostly on defense. And some, like a few times when he switched onto the perimeter, his foot speed hasn't looked as good kind of later in the season as maybe we all thought that it might be, right? Maybe he's not this amazing lateral athlete that we all thought, but as I've kind of been evaluating defense just generally for all of these guys, you find out, and this jives with what you see in the NBA, kind of what you were just speaking to, that you don't have to be the lightning quick De'Aaron Fox style guy to stay in front of point guards and two guards and wings, athletic threes in the NBA. Is a lot of it is like anticipation, which is a skill that's obviously really difficult to quantify and talk about, because, you know, what does that mean exactly? Is it, you know, you watching film before and scouting the player and knowing their tendencies, or you know, is like your reaction time something about your nervous system that's different than everybody else's? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then also strength on the perimeter is super important, because a lot of guys will kind of just get into you. You can be quicker than them, but you know, the rules state that, like, you know, you have to be there before them. The rules are set up to which, you know, there are guys that are just, if you are as quick as the person that you're guarding, they're just going to beat you, right? Like that's what we want. We want higher scoring games, so that makes sense. No one's ever going to stay in front of Westbrook. Mm-hmm. But if you can kind of stay in front of him, if you can ride him off his spot a little bit, well, then you can make it harder for him at the rim. But if he's a lot stronger than you, then even if you can get to the spot before him, he's going to put a shoulder into you, and you're not going to affect you know, his jump at the rim, or you know, or him pulling up for that kind of mid-range pull-up game at all. Anyway, I guess long-winded answer for, I think you're totally right. Athleticism is not the end-all be-all. Has a lot more to do with intelligence and strength, I think, while you have to meet kind of like a threshold of athleticism. Kawhi Leonard, for example, probably the best perimeter in the NBA. Not probably, he definitely is. He did not test off the charts at the NBA Combine at all. In fact, a lot of people were thinking, ah, crap, we thought this guy was super athletic. He's really not the super, super athlete that we all kind of think that he might be. He tested reasonably poorly on the shuttle cones and the high jump and all that stuff. So I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah. It's the Apple Boy writes, the real question is, how can a masked David Stern rig the ping pong balls for us?
Well, these are quality questions, man. I'm glad my expertise in the drafts, I'm glad that I'm here to help you answer all these questions that have something peripheral to do with the draft. This is great.
Sam writes, the triangle is here to stay, guys. Phil is going to draft either TJ Leaf or Grayson Allen. Book it. He loves Cole Aldridge, Sasha, Luke Walton, Travis Ware, Baker, Plumlee. I like these. Phil makes me sick. He wants players to adapt to him instead of adapting to players. Should have never fired Mike Woodson. 37 wins more than any season since Phil. Melo is leaving in the summer to the Clippers. CP3, D. Wade, Melo, Blake, DJ. Book it. If the Cavs lose finals, CP3, Wade, LeBron, Melo, DJ. P.S. If Rasheed Wallace played in the Pacers series, we would have won. Tyson equals soft. So TJ Leaf and Grayson Allen, those are names you do not hear as much.
Yeah, so TJ Leaf, someone who played with Lonzo Ball at UCLA this year, like a fairly highly touted freshman coming in, although no one really saw him as like a first round draft pick, I don't think. And then as the season got on, he was one of the more statistically dominant players at UCLA. Really skilled around the basket, a knack for rebounds, pretty athletic, has like more of a vertical than you'd think for just like your super generic white boy, you know, kind of thing. But there's huge problems on defense, strength wise, length wise, and lateral mobility wise. He's definitely a stretch four that can't play any defense. And I struggle with those guys. I don't think that he's a first round pick at all. In fact, I have him in a tier that's like pick 45 through 53, which I know is like pretty nebulous. I think he's like the second half of the second round. In Grayson Allen, I personally would just not draft him at all. I know that he's kind of a bigger name, right? He's been on the radar since Duke won their last championship and all that. And he definitely should have come out in the draft last year when he was getting a lot of first round pub. He's not athletic enough, I don't think. He's not athletic enough in traffic to really do well in the NBA. There's so much length in the NBA. He often gets blocked flat-footed. His handle's not good, so he can't play the one on offense. He can probably guard ones on defense well enough, but on twos, I don't see like him creating a lot of advantage in ISO situations. I just don't know what his NBA role is. Like, there's no player in the NBA right now that you can point to and say, hey, Sean, look at that guy. This is where I see Grayson Allen fitting in. He doesn't have the skills. Like, his jump shot is not consistent enough. His defense is not good enough. Driving to the rim, he has a lot of issues. I don't see it for him. Maybe you could have talked me into it last year, but this year I think he's kind of just like stayed pat, and that's a huge no-no, right? Like, if you come back for another year, you're supposed to get better and improve your draft stock. If you do nothing, this is the age where you're really smart starting, where you're supposed to start taking huge leaps in your development. And if NBA guys don't see that, then it just like scares them off completely. So I think Grayson Allen is a no draft.
Wow. Okay. That sounds terrible.
Well, I don't think Phil will draft those guys. Like, I wouldn't be worried about getting those guys.
I think the whole Noah thing has gotten everyone so freaked out over Phil's decision making that we just feel like anything's possible at this point.
Yeah. So, I mean, besides him and Rose, who was like a very defensible, I think, trade. I mean, you gave up Lopez for Rose, and that turned out obviously to be pretty bad in the end, I guess. But it was defensible at the time, at least, right? Like, the only really awful move is Noah, but Porzingis, I mean, that was a difficult one. Not that I think, you know, you guys knew exactly what he would be, but I mean, that was the right call and probably a difficult right call. So like, that's a huge chip in his favor, I think.
I think the Rose thing was terrible.
Okay.
I mean, we had finally a defensive center who's healthy and pretty young, and we traded him for a guy who plays absolutely no defense. And, oh, surprise, surprise, we let up 120 points a game 4 times a week.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my point is that Rose was kind of the defensible part. Like, it wasn't, we didn't all know that he was going to be awful. We thought that maybe he would just be kind of like a...
Yeah, who would have thought coming off of 4 straight injured seasons that he would have been bad? That was a shock. Well,
I mean, for the situation, I think that expecting like a low-end starter wouldn't have been out of the question. I wasn't necessarily like super gung-ho about it either, but I just think that it was kind of defensible. It was, yeah, you can make a decent case for it. Whereas Noah, you know, you can't make any case for it at all.
You should listen to the episode we recorded right after Rose got traded.
Okay.
Wasn't a very happy episode.
How many episodes recently have been happy? Give me those numbers. I'll go back and listen to those too.
One.
And what was that occasion?
That was when we decided to just get excited about the tank race instead of the, you know, we decided to just reverse course. We're getting mad at how bad we were, and then we just decided to embrace it.
It's the way to go, man. Yeah. It's the way to go.
Although they're not doing a good job of embracing it tonight. Brendan writes, hey guys, Brandon Jennings said this the other day. Not sure if you guys saw this. This is awful. Who do we think is to blame for this? Phil, do you think Horny plays a role, or do we think it's all Phil? So this is Brandon Jennings' quote. I think what just happened was that they were just going in a different direction. I wanted to play fast. I didn't really understand the triangle. It was just different. Every day it was just something different. It was just like, if we could just stick to what we could do, we'll be fine. So at times you just come into practice and you didn't know what was going on.
Yeah. I think probably leave it to Jennings to say something like that. You know, a lot of guys would have just kept their mouth shut. Not that that's like super inflammatory. I don't think that that's he's not like shots fired or anything, right? Like that's a reasonable thing to say, although I mean it's negative, so a lot of guys would say just keep that in house, don't say anything, blah blah blah. But I don't have any problems with this necessarily, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's nothing in there that we didn't already know, right? I mean, we kind of already knew that there was a bit of dysfunction and a bit of incongruity as far as the Phil Jackson's triangle and what Hordasek wants to do. I don't know. It's not surprising that he said it, and it's and like and what he said isn't surprising either, right?
No, it's not. It's just you don't like seeing 50 games into the season, nobody knows what's going on. It's not the greatest.
Yeah. It's not great to confirm kind of your worst fears. That's true.
Yeah, it's like we say these things and we joke about these things, and then a player comes out and is like, oh, no, well, that's actually true. And you're like, oh, good.
But the draft, right? Tanking, optimism.
Yes. So let's go to Facebook. We got a lot of draft-related questions there. Tristan writes, if they were the best player available, would the Knicks still be dumb enough to draft another power forward?
I'm trying to think who the power forwards. You could technically label Josh Jackson as a power forward. And you're talking about because of Carmelo, not Porzingis, right? I assume that's...
No, Porzingis. I don't think anybody... I think most people are accepting the fact that Melo's best days are behind him.
And that when you guys are good again, he won't be on the team, right? I assume.
Right.
So Jonathan Isaac, I think, will be best at the 4, although he'll probably start at the 3 until he adds a little bit of strength. And Josh Jackson plays a lot of 4 at Kansas, but they play really small. I think he can play the 3 or the 4 as well. But ideally, probably could play the 4 because he can't shoot as much. And paired with Porzingis, that makes a lot of sense. I think both of those guys are actually really compatible with Porzingis. And I don't know what you think, but I think Porzingis, like in the future, pushing him to the 5 makes a ton of sense too. I don't know. I I guess maybe I just don't agree with the premise that you're going to be doubling up at the four position. And even if you are with these guys, they're enough of like a 3-4 combo that it doesn't matter too much. Oh, also, I should mention Jason Tatum, somebody who I think could very well end up being your draft pick. Interesting guy, a guy that a lot of people like right now. Going into the tournament was like a huge name. He was even getting some pub at like the number one pick overall. I think that's out of the question for him. I draft him around like five, six, seven, something like that. But I think he's a good fit for you guys, just having kind of a wide open offense and you need a primary. He plays like a primary. I don't know if he's good enough to be a primary, but ideally I think he's a four as well. Next to Porzingis makes a lot of sense. So I guess my point is, of the 3-4s that are in the top 10, not counting Miles Bridges, who's kind of a fringe top 10 guy, I think it's fine doubling up on any of those guys because they can all play the three too. I mean, Porzingis is a 4-5. These guys are all 3-4s, so that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Frank writes, why even have the draft guy guest host the show? The Knicks feeling already they have a point guard of the future going to resign Rose to a max deal, then trade their top 5 pick with Melo to get out from under Melo's contract. In true Knicksian fashion, they will have shed one bad contract, replaced it with an even worse contract, and lost the draft pick. So this is what the franchise has done to us. We are all so jaded and bitter. We can't even get excited about a draft pick.
I know, I'm sensing a theme here. I mean, guys, come on. I would just tell you that the rest of the NBA world, I mean, is pretty fun. Like, people enjoy basketball outside of New York.
I can't imagine how that is at this point. Josh writes, is this French point guard any good? Realistically, we could have 3 Euro starters in the future, surround them with perimeter shooters, and we're the new Spurs.
So Ntilikina will be... I mean, so if the expectation is that Ntilikina comes in and is your Tony Parker, then, you know, don't get excited about that scenario, because that's not going to happen. He's not a primary initiator. He is one of those guys that surrounds Porzingis and whomever else is your wing creator, or, you know, maybe at the two or something like that. And then who's an absolute lockdown guy, maybe 1-3, definitely 1-2, and is your primary, you know, defensive stud on the perimeter. So he's a building block. He's probably never going to be an all-star, but like, just realistically speaking, like, expectations, I hate to burst anyone's bubble, but if you're not drafting number one, the odds of, like, in the top 10, the odds of you getting an all-star player, like first, second, even third best player on a championship team in the top 10 is only like 25%. And obviously that gets, you know, smaller as you get to like the 10 spot. So, like, you know, when you're drafting kind of like where you guys are, you're hoping for just a good starter. Really, that's like the draft expectation. Everyone's been hyping up this draft, saying that it's really top heavy, that there are a lot of all-stars at the top. You know, that only will kind of take place if a lot of these underclassmen actually declare, which some of them are dropping out. And then I think that as the season's gone on, we've kind of tampered our expectations, or at least I have, about, you know, that there's not going to be 5 all-stars at the top of this draft. So I think getting Ntilikina there, like a good George Hill, not that George Hill's not good. I think he's really good. If you get a George Hill or better at the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th pick, you know, you're sitting pretty as far as like expectations. You kind of outperform those, I think.
Appleboy, just wanted you to know, you're not bursting our bubble. The Knicks are.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And he said, isn't Tatum's absolute best potential basically Melo?
Who did he say again?
Tatum.
Yes, with defense. I mean, okay. So I don't see like Melo's creation. Like, he's not that good as a creator on offense. He plays like Melo. He loves the mid-range game. He loves, you know, sitting in the isolation and jabbing 3 times, you know, and taking a fadeaway. He loves that kind of stuff. But also defensively, he gives effort. He's a good rebounder. He's got kind of that barrel chest, is strong. I think can guard fours really well. Will struggle with some of the more athletic threes, but probably a lower ceiling offensively than Melo. But he cares on defense, and he's not bad there. He's a fluid athlete, changes direction really well. So So yeah, not as good as Melo for sure. He doesn't have that upside, but that style, yeah, for sure.
Anthony writes, Noah gets 20-game suspension for banned supplement. Is it possible that they can use this to fire him like my boss would fire me?
I don't know what the rules are about that. Probably not. I think that I think it's probably like a third or fourth time offense, something like that, I imagine. I don't know. As far as I know, this is his first offense, so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think it's egregious enough. You have to do a lot to get fired for a team.
Yeah, I mean, and in the CBA, you know, they have this whole like suspension thing set up, so you can't go like outside of what's already been pre-legislated, you know, by the Players Association and the league, and kind of start adding on punishment. You know, I don't think that would hold up in court, honestly. So, yeah, I don't. There's already a system in place to kind of punish people for this crime. You can't then tack on something else and get out of, unfortunately, get out of that contract.
Darryl writes, Jay, you called the superb run of losses. My heart is filled with Knicks hope. Can you give us the ping pong ball position? What's your call? I'm going to say third. I think they're going to finish with the fourth worst record, and they're going to move up one spot.
So they're tied with Philadelphia and Orlando and one game ahead of Sacramento, one and a half games in front of Minnesota. I don't know who has like the harder schedule going forward. That'd be interesting to kind of see. I think 538 is projecting Philly to land in the fifth spot. And I'm not sure if it's New York or Orlando, but I mean, yeah, predicting this is is obviously very difficult. I would love to see you guys get the number one overall pick. I think it would be so exciting. The NBA is more interesting when you guys are good. So that's my prediction. Why not? Right? Like,
yeah,
shoot for the stars here. I have to be Mr. Optimism, obviously.
The Knicks are going to win tonight, and that might be their last win of the season. Their schedule is...
Well, how many games are left?
There's eight more, seven straight playoff teams, and then Philly.
Ooh, there could be some serious ramifications, you know, on that one. That's like a game that you don't watch, right? But you have to know the results. And, you know, opposite of like, you know, teams that are fighting for playoff seedings and stuff like that, you know, playing for tanking seedings. Yeah. And what's the difference between the percentages? I don't even know off the top of my head what is even the difference between the fourth and the fifth seed as far as odds go.
Fourth is 11.9 and fifth, I think, is 8.2. It's a pretty significant difference.
Yeah, 4%. 4% is definitely something when the percentages are smoothed out as much as they are, you know, over the whole lottery. So, yeah, it's worth something for sure.
Tristan writes, is losing Noah for 10 games next season a blessing? I think it is.
I mean, it's just neutral, right? So he's bad or he doesn't play.
Well,
it's
So
why is it good?
I think if he is healthy to start next season, he starts. But now...
Oh, really?
But now if Billy gets off to a good start in the first 10 games, it would be really hard to justify moving Noah back into the starting lineup.
So are you guys prepared to tank next season as well? Or you want to see like good competitive basketball? Because honestly, if I were a Knicks fan, I would just enjoy the tanking also next year.
I don't know if
you guys will actually hold on to your picks or if you'll go, you know, shopping for free agents. Obviously, landing somebody is preferable, but I think waiting this out and letting your young core, whoever you get this year, and Porzingis kind of pull you up the standings as they get older, I mean, that's the ideal scenario.
I mean, that's how a well-run franchise would do it, but I feel like the Knicks would not do that. I feel like they're going to splurge. They're going to waste that $20 million. I'm not even going to entertain the idea of it being on Rose, even though he has 27, 4, and 6 tonight. And anytime he has a game like this, everyone ignores defense, and they're like, oh my God, that's an awesome box score. Let's re-sign this guy.
He's back.
And I feel like some of those people saying that are Knicks management. So that scares the crap out of me.
Yeah. Gosh, that's scary. So, like, the Brooklyn Nets, like, you can't jump ship now, right? Like, you can't just... Because, honestly, as horrible as this is, the Nets... oh, gosh, I'm blanking now. Who was their GM? The Greg Popovich acolyte. I'm trying to think. What's his name? Smart guy. May or something like that?
I'm drawing a blank, too.
I'm totally blanking. Anyway, I mean, he's a smart guy. They seem to be making of what they can, like, reasonable moves. I guess they haven't moved Brooke yet, which you would think that they would try to get something for him.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at that. Take advantage of his, like, one healthy season. Sell high.
Serious. Exactly. But as depressing as their future is, I mean, you guys are making it sound like you guys are just destined to be awful no matter what. Do you think Phil Jackson stays after this season? I know they have that mutual opt-out.
Yeah, I think he does. Although, I mean, that Noah contract, I keep going back to it, but I mean, if I was Dolan, I'd be like, all right, like, we're done here, right? Like, you made one of the worst moves in the history of this franchise.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Dolan's decision making seems like that's also kind of unknowable, right? Like, what he's going to do.
Yeah.
It seemed like he had the reputation of being a meddling owner.
Yeah.
And yet that's actually not really been the case, right? He's just hired awful GMs or awful team presidents and then handed them the keys, which is maybe not.
No, he admitted that he did meddle in the past. And that's, in fact, I believe he meddled a lot during the Melo trade. And that's why Donnie Walsh quit, because Walsh was building something.
Right.
And Dolan got involved, made them give up the house for Melo. Walsh quit. And then I think Dolan meddled a little with the Isaiah years. And then Dolan finally said, all right, I'm bad at this meddling thing. I'm going to give the keys to Phil, a guy who's never had a job like this before, and I'm going to step back and not meddle. And weird that a guy who's never had any position like this at all didn't do good at it, but, you know, that's another thing.
Yeah.
Jaime writes, I want this team to just let Rose go, move Melo, and bite the bullet, and let Noah go. Start trading for the draft pick and start young. It's better than what these guys bring to the table.
I agree. I mean, that's pretty clear. So can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Who of these top guys are you most excited about? I mean, you've probably dabbled a little bit, right? Like YouTube mixtapes, like, you know, a few dunks here and there. I'm sure you've seen something.
Obviously Fultz, but I don't, it's like praying for the number one pick is, you know, I don't want to live in that fantasy world. I'm starting to really warm up to Josh Jackson. I know I want a point guard so bad, but I feel like this team has so many holes. You do best player available.
Yeah. Yeah. If you guys got Josh Jackson, I think that he's probably, well, that's not true. I think that I would draft him number two overall. I think that he probably doesn't have the ceiling that Lonzo Ball has. Like, he kind of has like a more narrow distribution of career outcomes, if that makes sense. It's mm-hmm. a little more certain what he'll be, whereas Lonzo Ball has like a much lower floor, but probably has a higher upside, right? He could be this genius point guard and great off-ball guy, and his length and intelligence could make him a great defender. He could be that. Josh Jackson doesn't have any great strengths like Lonzo does. Like, I don't know if anyone in this draft has a strength like to the same magnitude that Lonzo Ball has his strength, which is just like his intelligence and his feel and his passing and all that stuff. But Josh Jackson is just such like a prototypical NBA wing defender. He's really smart on offense. Obviously the only thing is the jump shot, but kind of in the Draymond Green role. I don't love comparisons. Like I almost, it's kind of like taboo on my podcast to make a player comparison. I know that's like the way that most of the draft community kind of goes about it, but they're almost always misleading. But just in the one aspect that Draymond Green really excels in, the short role, right? Where you have to double Curry, he gets the pass, then he goes 4-on-3 and makes either a good pass or takes it all the way to the rim. That is like the ideal scenario for Josh Jackson. And I think his jump shot is developing So he's more certain than Lonzo, doesn't have the ceiling, but I think he's probably the best number two pick just because of that certainty. If you guys walked away with him, or frankly Lonzo for that matter, I think you guys should be really, really excited, which means that you probably won the lottery and were in the top three picks.
This relates to Kenny's question. Do we really want LeVar Ball soap opera to add to the Phil Jackson soap opera we are currently living in at MSG?
I mean, New York would certainly give him a stage unlike any other that he's seen. I mean, granted, he's in LA right now, but from Chino Hills to UCLA, then to the freaking New York Knicks, I mean, that's he would have a platform and we would hear about it all the time, and it would be insanely annoying. If you could tune it out, Lonzo's probably worth it. And this whole garbage about how LeVar Ball is hurting Lonzo's draft stock, or it's eventually going to hurt him as a player. That might be true. I don't know anything about these situations, you know, on the inside or anything like that. I don't have any personal contact with any of these guys, but I don't know. It just seems odd to me. Like, these three guys grew up in the spotlight. They were huge stars in high school. They were playing on this crazy up and down team that almost went undefeated. One of the best high school teams in the country. You know, they're celebrities right now. And their dad's always been like, you're going to tell me that LeVar hasn't always been crazy? Like, they grew up with this guy in their house. And at least on the court, they're the most, well, Lonzo is like the most composed player. I don't know, that I can think of, besides maybe like Ben Simmons or something. And then off the court, none of these guys are in trouble. I don't see like impacting how Lonzo actually turns out as a player, but it would be super annoying to have to listen to LeVar takes all the time, you know, if you're a Knicks fan. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
What did you say today? And, yeah. Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, the New York media would milk it, too. It wouldn't.
For sure.
You have time for a few more questions?
Maybe a couple more, yeah.
Okay, just let me know if you got to go.
All right.
Appleboy writes, serious question, what can we get from Melo at the draft?
That's interesting. I don't know. So what, how many years does he have left on his contract? Is it two?
Two.
And that last one is the player option, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know. I guess it kind of depends on who you're trading him to. Obviously that matters. I think he's probably worth a first rounder after the lottery, I think. And frankly, most of those teams that have picks, so like from pick 20 to 30, Oklahoma City, the Utah Jazz, and the San Antonio Spurs are the only teams that own their own pick. So most of these picks that would be kind of like tradable for Melo, you know, if we're going off my assumption that kind of post lottery first round picks are kind of what he's worth at the moment, they're owned by a lot of other teams that have done trades with these good teams to get their first round picks that aren't super valuable. Frankly, like I talked about expectations before, expectations of drafting a starter at the end of the first round are, I think less than a quarter. It's like 1 in 20, maybe not 1 in 20. It's like 1 in 5 or something like that. And then at the end of the first, it's like almost a coin toss whether these guys even stay in the league or not. So they're valuable in that they're cheap contracts, but you know, you're not expecting anybody good. I guess to kind of sum up my point is that none of these teams that have these picks, Portland, the Magic, the Nets have two of them. Portland has another one. The Lakers, the Jazz, none of these teams financially or kind of in their rebuilding process make sense as a destination for him. So I just, rather than kind of talk about what exactly his value is, it's like, who is a trade partner? You know, it's like, it's really difficult to find one of those guys in that mix, because all of these teams, most of them are rebuilding right now. So not, you know, you don't want to take on Melo now. I don't know. That's kind of my take. Of course, who knows what could happen. That's just kind of off the top of my head, but
yeah. Jaime writes, what do you guys think about Malik Monk from Kentucky, or how Lonzo Ball from UCLA would be if he was still on the table? I think we covered that already. Alan writes, should the Knicks draft by position of need or best player? We answered that. Also, the Knicks have two second-round picks, currently 43 and 57. Who should we look at these positions? Also, has Frank Mason played himself into the low first round?
All right, this is a really is a really good question. Okay, for the Frank Mason, I'll just I'll give my answer that I gave before. Short point guards, I'll always bet against them. He's a decent player, but not somebody that I would waste a draft pick on. Somebody that I would try to, you know, bring him in for camp and sign them to, like, you know, a 4-year guaranteed minimum deal or something like that. You know, have player control over him, or, you know, something like that, where you could just cut him, you know, whenever you wanted. Not somebody that I would waste a draft pick on. Mm-hmm. Specifically because you could just sell that draft pick, get some money, and then bring him into your camp, because I think he's probably going to go undrafted. But the 43rd pick and the 58th pick, this gets interesting. I have a couple, in fact, one player named Borisa Simanic, a Serbian player. I think he's 19 already, maybe he's 20. But he's one of my favorite players in the draft, if only just because I think his potential is so, so high. Right now I have him in like that 16 to 25 ish range. It's like my tier 6, and he's probably going to go undrafted, frankly. So I don't know if he's going to declare or not, but if he does, this guy's really, really interesting. He's not the Porzingis 7'3" or, you know, whatever Porzingis really is in shoes. But he's a 6'11" three. I think he's a three just because he's not very strong. But he has, like, better handles than Porzingis on the perimeter. You know, just think about, like, a super tall beanpole Serbian kid who has the smoothest jump shot you've ever seen and can pull up really, really quickly and perfectly, like, almost Ray Allen style. Just, you know, I'm not comparing it to him. I'm just saying aesthetically, that's kind of what he looks like, pulling up off crossovers from NBA range. The problem is that he has been heralded as like this big up and coming prospect for a few years now, because he grew early in the international scene. He's been kind of a big name, but it's like, apparently it's all mental for him. He gets down really easily. The team that he's on right now doesn't have a lot of minutes for him. And in Europe, they don't play a lot of these younger guys because they need to win now. Cause if they don't win, then they fall to a different league and they lose a ton of money. So, you know, it's not like the Knicks, if they tank, you know, they just stay in the NBA and they get revenue sharing and all that stuff. If Red Star, who he plays for, if they lose, you know, they fall into that lower bracket and they start losing money anyway. So the point that I'm making is this guy's a ton of potential, really athletic. I think he can guard threes and fours in the NBA, really super long arms, quick with his feet. If he can get on a good team with a very defined role and you're not asking him to make a ton of decisions, just guard, you know, a certain positions, you know, help in this way, you know, I think because he's been asked to do so much at the lower levels, kind of transitioning into that primary role in the professionals where he's playing now, he's just kind of over his head. If he's in a defined role and these personal issues can be kind of dealt with, he is like the diamond in the rough. Like I said, he might not even be drafted, but in the late lottery, someone that's super, super intriguing for me. Also, just maybe a couple more names to throw out there. Somebody that I like that plays with Josh Jackson, Sviatoslav Mikhailuk. He's from Ukraine. Interesting backstory. He went to Kansas when he was 16 years old, and this is his third year, and he's only 19 now, but he has an amazing jump shot. He plays the 2-3. And he's more athletic than you think. I think that he could be a good rotational player. He's not always going to give you great defense, but he's smart enough to where in a team concept, he can kind of excel. And then one more guy, Cam Oliver. I don't know where he's going to be drafted. I've seen him in more consensus mock draft media kind of stuff going all over the place. He's a power forward from Nevada, has that very stereotypical old school power forward build, big shoulders, kind of like a Larry Johnson type, but he has really great block numbers at the rim and he can stretch the floor on offense. He's not the best decision maker, but he's really athletic and he shows flashes of being a really, really competent defensive plus stretch four. Really, really interesting prospect. Somebody that you definitely take a chance on kind of in the mid second to late second. And then the last guy that I'll say, Harry Giles, a big name coming into the draft who I had in my tier one, frankly, because of a lot of people that I trusted, although I wasn't super high on him coming in. He was always kind of just a bag of potential, but he still has some of that potential that he showed. And I think that he'll probably declare. Well, actually, no, I don't know if he's going to declare or not. I think that he should, because his stock might fall even further. I think that people will still draft him at the end of the first, just on upside alone. But there's a chance that he declares and he slides into the second round. If you can get him, you can develop him. You can have him for 4 years on a guaranteed minimum contract. That's one of the best bets in the draft, I think. I don't think he'll pan out, but if he does, he's super athletic, super long, could be kind of a small five that can anchor a defense for a long time. So, I don't know. Interesting.
Nice. Well, maybe we'll luck out in the second round as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, last five more minutes. Does that work for you?
Yeah, yeah. I think five is probably perfect. Yeah.
Okay. Gilliam writes, what qualities do you look for in a player to fit into the triangle, and what is less important?
Well, the triangle has always had the successful teams with the triangle has always had a really good scoring / decision maker on the wing. That's pretty obvious, right? But you also want a big who can pass from the high post and another big, usually your four or maybe like your second five. If some of these old school teams were playing two fives when the triangle was really big, who could run the baseline really well, and was mainly just your rebounder. So, you know, I mean, if you really want to go this route, you find a defensive first point guard, aka Frank Ntilikina, who I've already talked at length about, who's a good spot up shooter, who could play off of, your wing threat. So I don't know, maybe you're looking for, I don't even know. Josh Jackson would be, I guess, a decent fit if in that mold as kind of a wing creator, although he's not a great jump shooter, but as a passer, that's definitely his best strength on offense and has a high motor, would make the cuts that the triangle kind of lives off of really effective, crashes the glass really well on offense. And then as far as a big in this class that's good from the high post, there's really nobody that's worth drafting at the top of the draft for that. I'll just name this guy as kind of that baseline runner, the other big that you're playing with, the guy from the high post. His name is Zach Collins. Most people say that he's not going to commit or he's not going to declare for the draft. He plays for Gonzaga. He's a freshman who's kind of gotten stuck behind Kurt Karnowski, who's their starting five right now. The huge, like almost 7-footer who can pass really well, is good on offense. Obviously Gonzaga is still in the tournament. So, you know, people might check out Zach Collins now. Highly touted freshman coming in, someone who I right now have in the same tier as Frank Ntilikina and Jason Tatum. I might come down on him more, but from the film that I've seen, he is like the prototypical NBA five. He is really, really light leaper. Like his first and second jumps are almost identical. He's really long. So defensively that adds up to being a good rim protector. And then on the other end, being like, you know, the recipient of lobs, the motor guy that's running in that triangle system that's running the baseline, is going to box out perfectly every time, is going to get a lot of putbacks, that kind of guy. He's perfect for that role. He's not a creator. He's not a back to the basket scorer in any way, shape or form, but just like the prototypical NBA five right now, that's him. I think his jump shot's pretty smooth from the free throw line. He's really good and could develop from like 15 feet, kind of the elbow range. Although as a decision maker and a passer, he's not really there. And I don't think you ever expect him to be that, but he's a very, very interesting player. So if you got him, pairing him with Porzingis could be really interesting, I think. So those are a few guys to look out for.
Awesome. That is way more informative than we could ever be with the draft. So thank you so much. Gilliam, I know you had a few more questions, but I think we covered most of those in the other ones. So sorry we didn't get to read them. So Ode to Odin, that is your Twitter and your website. So follow Sean, check out his stuff. Very, very knowledgeable with the draft stuff. I was impressed. You even knew players in the 40s and 50s, which we couldn't even pronounce. So
there are a lot of guys in this draft that you can't pronounce very well, that I probably am not pronouncing very well. One hint on player pronunciations in this draft coming up, you know, when you draft your new favorite Serbian player, the C's are almost always hard. They're almost always the ch sound instead of the k sound. They're almost always soft. Almost always the church sound and not the car sound. Anyway. A lesson that I've learned recently.
Awesome. So thank you so much for joining.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on. You guys are great. I'm bummed that that your co-host couldn't be here. I think your podcast, frankly, on our network is one of the best. So yeah, keep up the good work. And if you can throw any of your notoriety, your pub my way, it's greatly appreciated. Thank you so much for having me on.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah, maybe we'll have you on again later to talk about your thoughts on how the draft played out.
Yeah, sure. Would love to.
Awesome. So thanks again. Listen to Ode to Odin, Almighty Baller Podcast Network, almightyballer.com, and odetoodin.com. And we will be back next week with the usual misery and negativity. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, love. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
It's all over.
Goodbye.
It's time to go.
This is the end.
Say goodbye.
You better go away.
I'm gonna.